I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, one of the most popular female athletes in the world is lending her support to the effort to protect girls' sports. Plus, Seattle's U.S. attorney, fired by Trump after less than an hour on the job, is suing. And the costs of paying out on lawsuits has just hit another record for the state of Washington. So what are they going to do about it? That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. What an awesome deal. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Bravery is doing what's right when you have everything on the line. There will come a time in this debate over protecting girls' sports when it's very easy to say that you are opposed to boys playing against girls. And I don't think it will really be too long from now. I give it a year or two, and everybody will be saying, well, of course, boys and girls are different. Their biology is different. Of course, we shouldn't have boys, even if they say they're girls, competing against girls. I mean, that was the whole point of Title IX. And I think I would encourage people who are on the fence right now, who believe that, you know, protecting girls' sports is the right thing to do, but are maybe scared to say it. I would encourage you to be brave and to say it before it's easy, before it's an easy thing to do. And if you need a little motivation, there was one hell of a good example of this that broke yesterday, and I saw this news, and I was just overjoyed. One of the most popular female athletes in the entire world right now has just come out at a time when she has everything to lose and said that she supports protecting girls' sports and girls' spaces. I'm talking about the WNBA's Sophie Cunningham, who really has shot to stardom over her kind of electric personality on and off the court. Of course, she had maybe the most shared meme on the planet in the history of time ever with her pointing during a recent game. ESPN did this long article about her and her life and, you know, all the attention she's getting. It's called Love Her or Hate Her. So for Sophie Cunningham, won't be ignored. And you really should read the whole thing. And it talks about, you know, her efforts to protect Caitlin Clark on the court, you know, sometimes roughing people up in response to what's happening. But I mean, she's just taken off in popularity as a result. You know, this WNBA player who really wasn't making a ton of money in terms of what, you know, people who play professional sports make, has been able to bring in all these endorsement deals, et cetera. And then also how she's dealing with some of the more negative aspects of becoming so famous. And one of the things is people want to guess her politics and they want to guess what she's all about. And they want to call her things like Mega Barbie just because she's blonde and white, apparently. But buried in this article, it talks a little bit about this. And she made one thing very clear, that she doesn't think it's hateful to protect girls' sports. She thinks it's about telling the truth. So it says, it talks about people calling her Mega Barbie on some corners of the internet. She calls it projection because of what she looks like and where she's from. It does say she'll weigh in on how to protect women's sports, she says, because she's in that world and feels qualified to speak to that world. Quote, I got a lot of negative feedback about me hating trans. I never once said that. I think that I am here to extend love. But I also think with that love is truth and being honest. And I want to protect young girls in a locker room and young girls in sport who shouldn't have to go against biological men. This is the most difficult time in Sophie Cunningham's career for her to say that. Again, if she waited a year or two, maybe not so much. But she has everything on the line right now, skyrocketing in popularity. She has a sneaker coming out with Adidas on Friday, I believe. That's huge for a WNBA player. That's huge for any professional athlete to have their own sneaker put out. And she is, just days before that, taking a position on an issue that the media and the left lose their ever-loving minds over. And I saw the vilification start instantly when this article came out of people saying, oh, she's a bigot, she's a transphobe. And she has to know. I mean, there are even some of her fellow WNBA players who have come out and said, it's so stupid, who have suggested that it's bigoted to say that girls' sports should be protected. Not a single one of them would want to share a court with LeBron James. Not a single one of them. Even one of the, you know, you pick, pluck one of the worst NBA players who's just riding the bench all year long. Not a single one of them would say, yeah, throw him on the court with me and I'll beat him. Because that's just reality. So when they take that position, it is only virtue signaling. I mean, I saw this and I was just filled with enthusiasm to continue the fight because it has been very defeating to see people who I thought better of. You know, Congressman Adam Smith, some moderate state lawmakers, and other moderate members of Congress who are just too pansy to say what they know to be true. And you have someone like Sophie Cunningham, who's making more money now than she probably ever dreamed of. A lot of that in endorsements. And Adidas? Adidas has been on the woke nonsense bandwagon before. I mean, they were posting swimsuits for sale on their website, women's swimsuits modeled by men. And that's the company Sophie has a shoe coming out with on Friday. And she's brave enough to say, and to take all the credibility and popularity and stardom that she's built up and say, you know what, whatever it costs me, no. I want to protect girls in sports and girls in their private spaces. Because this is common sense. And again, had she come out and if she said it 2-3 years from now, I wouldn't be celebrating it. I'd just be like, well, yeah. This is the most difficult time for her to do it, and she did it. And that is a huge boon to our movement in Washington State, where we could be one of the first blue states in the nation in November for voters to say, no boys and girls sports. And it is going to take every single bit of this, of momentum, to achieve that, because the other side has gone batshit on this issue. And they're going to spend millions of dollars on it. I mean, the ACLU, the Gender Justice League, the Washington Education Association, the National Education Association, they are all donating six figures to the No Hate in Washington State campaign to keep biological boys and girls spaces. And I'm sorry, but Let's Go Washington, I think their donors are very focused on the income tax fight and not the protecting girls sports fight. So I'm not really sure how much money they're going to spend on the airwaves and on TV and on social media, sharing the common sense argument that we have to vote yes in November to protect girls sports. So something like this that we can have behind that movement is really, really important. Because just a couple weeks ago, literally everyone on the internet was sharing Sophie Cunningham memes. And talking about how awesome she is and how funny she is and how great she is. Now, how many of those people will still think that after she said this? Most of them. And that's what I want to get across. Most of them will. There might be a couple unhinged people who are now like, oh, she's a bigot. They weren't going to go out and buy her shoes anyway. We have to ignore those people. It, like Megan Rapinoe, good gracious. So as Sophie Cunningham, you know, is coming out with this statement, Megan Rapinoe, who is nowhere near as popular as Sophie Cunningham, she was on The View. And she, of course, is totally in favor. Yeah, because she would want Cristiano Ronaldo playing soccer against her. Good grief. So she's on The View, virtue signaling and lying about this issue.
First, it was like, well, nobody likes women's sports and nobody wants to watch it. Or there was, you know, abuse happening and nobody seemed to care. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to use a vulnerable group of people in the trans community to be like, oh, well, we're just protecting women's sports and we care so much about it. When the Heritage Foundation is now going to go after Title IX. Mm-hmm. So is it about reproductive rights or is it about just women's rights in general? And so all of these things, like, yes, they're going after trans people in sports and they're using this as a wedge issue because we love sports. Sports and, you know, we don't want our little girls to be unsafe in sports. And it's like, unsafe from who? But okay. Yeah. But now we're using this as like an overarching thing when really what we're attacking women. We're saying, if you look like this as a woman, you can play.
We're not attacking women, not attacking anyone. And when she says there at the end, if you look like this as a woman, you can play. Yeah, if you are a woman, you can play. If you are a girl, you can play. If you're a boy who says they're a girl, that's not about how you look. It's about your biology. But how you look probably tells us also, bigger, faster, stronger. that you're a boy. And then she brought up specifically the effort to protect girls' sports in Washington State.
There's a bill in Washington happening right now that's going to require all girls, just like full stop, to go through a sex test, an invasive, examining their genitals to see if they're
a woman.
Yeah.
And that has not worked out well historically for people to do
we
that.
We know what that means. Black girls are going to get questioned more and they're going to get questioned first. Who's doing the examination?
Who wants to subject themselves to that?
And so they're going to see a pullback. They don't like women in sports because it helps us with confidence and power. And we see so many women in the
C-suite
played elite level sports. Yes. It's just great for you physically and all of it. But it's an attack on women in society. And I think the tie between the Heritage Foundation now wanting to go after Title IX, it's just like so blatant. Like, let's connect these dots. It's more than just a couple of trans kids in the entire country and a couple in each state being able to participate in some youth sports.
Yeah.
Mm. And all those lemmings. Yeah. One of the stupidest things I've ever heard. So first of all, it's a lie. There are no invasive genital exams, as we've already said, but may I be redundant? We've shown you the sports physicals that student athletes already have to take according to the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association every other year. Kids already go see a doctor. Their doctor knows if they're a boy or a girl. They just have to check the box. They're already getting the sports physicals. This was the only way that opponents could try to take this 80-20 issue and flip it on its head, is saying they're going to touch girls' private parts. And weirdos. You sick weirdos. And then for Megan Rapinoe to say, you know what? I know it's kind of lying, but can we play that again? Up until the black girls part?
There's a bill in Washington happening right now that's going to require all girls, just like full stop, to go through a sex test, an invasive, like, examining their genitals to see if they're a woman.
Yeah.
And that has not worked out well historically for people to do that.
We know what that means. Black girls are going to get questioned more and they're going to get questioned first.
Okay. What are you even talking about? Are you saying that black girls and women look like men? Are you that? Because that's kind of racist. I mean, why would they pull in black girls first? Oh, it's because you just had to fit in another. Oh, you're being, I'm a woke white woman. I've got to defend women of color somehow. How do I fit this in? Like, she's absolutely losing her mind. Try to be as woke as possible. And then all the lemmings on The View are like, yes, yes, they'll pull in black women first. What are you talking about, Megan Rapinoe? The dumbest thing I've ever heard. And after this, because, you know, Sophie Cunningham came out and this was being shared so far and wide, and Sophie Cunningham, unlike Megan Rapinoe, is so universally beloved, No Hate in Washington State is having also a mental health breakdown. Oh my God, Sophie Cunningham, what do we do? So they put out this campaign email this morning. I love that Nicole gets these now. I'm trying to figure out when they're going to take her off their mailing list. And they're like, we have an urgent ask for all of our supporters. And fortunately, it's a really easy thing. Megan Rapinoe talked about 6:38 on The View this morning, and we want everyone to see it. Please help us by liking, sharing, and commenting on these social media posts, because they want this out there, because so many people are sharing the Sophie Cunningham interview. But I mean, please, okay, by all means, share this, because it's deranged. It is deranged, and reasonable people will see it for what it is. What did my friend Dory used to call it? The woke word dice. We've got, how many talking points can we get in? And she's trying to gaslight people into saying, oh, it'll hurt women if you keep men out of women's sports. Literally the opposite of the intention of Title IX. I mean, that is so asinine. It would be so much more honest. And I would even maybe have an argument if you just said, Megan said, look, you know, I really care about trans people. I think it'll hurt their feelings if we leave them out of sports. Yes, they have a biological advantage, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay if girls lose opportunities, lose games, lose titles, because I care more about the feelings of trans people. I'd be like, okay, at least she's being honest. But no, she has to share the lie about invasive genital exams, and then they'll do the genital exams on black girls and women first. These people are absolutely grotesque. For the first time in my life, although, can we look at those Sophie Cunningham shoes again? I hate them. Not my vibe, right? Not my vibe. But I can see how a lot of young girls and women would be like, oh, that's awesome. Pink and blue and orange and all this stuff. hate the shoes, but for the first time in my life, I might go buy a celebrity shoe. Just to be like, amen, sister, I hope you make a boatload of money and thank you for standing up for women and girls. You know what I won't be buying? No Hate in Washington State has launched their own merch store. Let's compare the sales of Sophie Cunningham's shoe and the No Hate in Washington State. They've got, some stickers, some can coolers, a little sweater, tank top.
I don't appreciate them using a rainbow cat.
Yeah, it's a rainbow cat. That cat looks so mad.
That's
look at how mad the cat is. It says the cat's saying, no way, vote no on aisle 26-001. Okay, and so let's be honest. These people aren't cool enough to need a koozie. They're not drinking anything with anybody. It's just outrageous. So yeah, maybe we need to do a merch line about protecting girls' sports or something like that. But really happy to see Sophie Cunningham laying it all on the line. And she's smart enough. She knows what's going to come after that. And she's willing to do it. She's willing to sacrifice it because she believes in it. And that's a space. And they shared, photos of her as a young athlete. And the amount of time and energy that she put in to be as talented as she is. And she just wants other girls to have the same opportunity. And as she said, it's not about hate, it's about love. And sometimes love is telling people the truth and just being honest, even if it hurts their feelings.
XXXY is great merch.
Oh, yes. Sorry. XXXY. We don't need our own merch. XXXY has great merch related to protecting girls' sports. So, all right. Speaking of celebrities, although we'll have to go down a few pegs. D-list? Are we hitting the D-list? A, B, C, D, E, F, G-list?
Yeah,
perhaps not D-list. I think D-list is fair.
I think that's fair.
Look, if I had to rank myself, I would say I'm a D-list local celebrity.
There you go.
Maybe even a B.
B local?
Local, not national.
Yep.
I think I'm a B.
If it's in a different category than Jennifer Aniston, yes.
Yes, sure. That's world celebrity. I'm talking about local.
Yep.
Come on.
I'll give you that.
B-list, for sure. What is Rick Steves? I would say he's also B-list, local celeb. I think, the Seahawks, sports, those are your A-listers, right? Then you get the political realms. Am I giving myself too much credit?
No, I'll give that to you.
Thanks,
Nicole.
Be for
local.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the income tax lovers are trotting out their own celebrities to try to defeat the effort to repeal the income tax on millionaires. So this is from Como News. Rick Steves, Ken Jennings, back campaign to stop the repeal of Washington's millionaires tax. So Rick Steves is the travel guy. Ken Jennings is the Jeopardy guy. It says two prominent Washington figures who say they will personally pay more under the state's new millionaires tax are urging voters to reject Initiative 645, a ballot measure that would repeal the tax. The No on 645 campaign announced endorsements from travel writer Rick Steves and Jeopardy host Ken Jennings. So I think we've already heard this. We'll get to this in a moment. But now they're actually formally part of this No on 645 campaign. It says in a new statement released by the campaign, Steves said, vote no on Initiative 645. Well, if you're like me and you've reached a point where you have enough money and you understand that consuming more will not bring you more joy or security, you understand that this tax package will have no real negative impact on anyone. Instead, by defeating I-645, our entire community, rich, poor, and those in the middle, will enjoy the benefits of a society where childcare is affordable, there's free breakfast and lunch for students, reduces taxes on small businesses, and more tax credits for working families. That's my kind of deal. Now, it's really interesting that Como News is featuring them in this way, because we already knew that Rick Steves and Ken Jennings were in support of the income tax on millionaires. I mean, I think it was like several months ago now that we talked about this. Ken Jennings, who is a noted lefty lunatic, was in favor of police defunding in Seattle and all the nonsense that was happening up at Chaz Chop. He might be smart, but the guy is a lunatic politically. He had come out months ago and said, my Washington state tax is going to go up, and that's a good thing. We had the most regressive tax structure in the country for decades. Okay. And then Rick Steves had also posted back in March his support because he was like, oh, wow, a new tax on fat paychecks like mine was just signed into law in my home state and I like it. And Governor Ferguson shared that endorsement from Rick Steves saying, Rick Steves on the millionaire's tax. And then shared a quote from Rick and then said, it's time to change our upside down tax system. Now, look, I think that, you know, Rick Steves, I've seen him. I was at an event with Rick Steves put on by the local PBS, whatever that's called. And he was there at the same time. We weren't on the same panel, but the geriatrics loved Steve. Like the same that are with Indivisible and out, you know, protesting Trump and stuff all the time. There was like, you would have swore that it was groupies around a rock star. The geriatrics were like swarming him, like, sign this, you know, tell me about travel and stuff. So do I think that he has, you know, credibility and people who like him? Yes, but I think this is sort of the NPR type crowd who's already easily convinced by this lie that taxing millionaires will somehow make everyone else thrive and will make the economy better. So I don't know that that's so much of a surprise. And then Ken Jennings, you know, I don't know. I don't know his popularity. I think that's also among the older people, is it not? So, you know, I think not that there's anything wrong with Jeopardy. I like a good episode of Jeopardy, but after they let him come in and host it, because he attacked me verbally in 2020 over my condemnation of what was happening in the autonomous zone. So Ken Jennings, dead to me, dead to me. But here's the thing about these two guys. First of all, I want to issue a little bit of a challenge. I believe Ken Jennings makes more than $1 million a year because I believe his Jeopardy contract is $4 million a year. So I actually do believe he'll pay this. I don't believe Rick Steves. I don't believe Rick Steves that he personally, from his business, is still making more than $1 million a year. I would challenge Rick Steves if he's going to say, oh, my big fat paycheck and I want to pay more and I can't wait. I would challenge him to produce his tax return from this past year. Much like this other guy in tech who I called out saying, you already sold your company. You don't make $1 million a year. And he had to kind of de facto admit that. But he's saying, oh, millionaires like me. But it's just a lie. You could be a millionaire, but not be making $1 million a year. That's going to be taxed under this. I would bet, I don't know what I'd bet, but I don't think Rick Steves is making or taking from his business more than $1 million a year. I believe he's a millionaire. But I would challenge him to prove me wrong and provide, you know, you can black out some information, but a copy of his tax return. Here's the thing. This is the worst kind of virtue signaling. Because what these two guys are doing, who are wealthy, is they are cheering on and supporting the demise of the state's economy in a way that is ultimately going to hurt the working class and the poor. And I think that both of them are smart enough to see what's happening. There's an exodus of millionaires. There's an exodus of wealth. There's an exodus of entrepreneurs and job creators. And as more of those people leave, there's only, what was the figure, maybe 20,000 households that when this was passed, the state of Washington thought would be subject to the millionaire's tax. It is only going to take a fraction of them leaving for the state's projections of what this tax would bring in to fall way short, and for them to do what? Turn it into an income tax on everyone. These two rich virtue signalers are hastening the state adopting a universal income tax on every single Washingtonian. That's what they're doing. They might say, oh, this is about me paying more. If they really believe that, I've said it a million times, and I'm not being obtuse, write a check. They're like celebrating, I get to pay more in taxes. You can pay more in taxes, Rick and Ken, today. I'll hold your hand while you write the check. You can pay more in taxes today. You're choosing not to, but you want people to believe that you are virtuous, that you are generous, that you are all of these things. But where will you be in 4 to 5 years when Democrats use this to tax everyone's income? Where will you be when that hurts working class families, when that hurts poor families? Will you be there to prop them up? Will you be there to write them a check so they can pay their bills, so they can keep the lights on, so they can put gas in their car, so they can buy groceries? You won't be. You want to be seen as righteous. But all you're doing is hurting the poor and the middle class. And Steve, Rick Steves, I need you to provide me with proof that you're actually paying the millionaire's tax, or you would, because I just don't believe it. So, yeah, they've got their D/B-list celebrities out trying to do this. But what are we going to do? We're going to vote no in November. And the other thing I just want to point out about this quick. It's offensive. You've got guys that rich in a state where voters have 10 times said we don't want the voters and, you know, the legal proceedings. 10 times people have said over and over, we don't want this, we don't want this, we don't want this. And Democrats say we don't care. And then they pass it in an unconstitutional fashion. So you've got these two guys who are basically celebrating unconstitutional laws and celebrating a government that doesn't listen to its people. That doesn't seem very woke and virtuous to me. So we're voting yes in November. What did I say?
You said no.
Oh my gosh.
A minute ago.
We're voting yes in November. If I ever say something like that, just yell at me.
I was gonna.
We're voting yes in November to repeal the unconstitutional income tax. And while we're at it, to save girls' sports, we're voting yes. And to restore parental rights, we're voting yes. All right. Coming up next, the U.S. attorney who was on the job for less than an hour before he was fired by President Donald Trump is now suing the Trump administration. Okay. First, if you are looking to save some money as a family because taxes are so high or whatever else it is, gas prices are pretty high, reach out to our friends at Firstmark Insurance and take the Firstmark Challenge. FirstmarkInsurance.com, FirstmarkInsurance.com. 11,000 families have taken the Firstmark Challenge. So many of them have been Undivided viewers and listeners. It is a growing family, and we hear so much tremendous feedback from all of you about the customer service, about how nice it is to pick up the phone and get a local company. And about the amount of money you're saving. Mike and I saved $2,000 on our renewal this year. We didn't have to lift a finger. They just emailed us and said, hey, we went back, looked at your policies, and we can save you $2,000. It was so easy. And we're like, okay, great. Love it. And we have Undivided viewers who, as soon as they changed over, they are saving hundreds of dollars a month, which who couldn't use an extra $100 or so a month, $1,200 a year. So what are you waiting for? Your savings could start tomorrow. FirstmarkInsurance.com, FirstmarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. You know, that terrifies me. The fact that even I could say no
accidentally
is it's such a confusing thing. I hate the initiative process for that reason. It's just that has to be, oh my gosh, I know I've already, I sound like a broken record, but you're hearing me say it so much because we need everyone to know it. Yes, yes, yes. Even though you hate the income tax, yes to repeal it. It is so damn confusing. The messaging game has to be strong. All right. So remember we broke this story on the show last week. So the President Trump's pick for United States Attorney in Seattle, which is the top federal prosecutor, is Neil Floyd. We've had Neil on the show. And the issue is that Senator Patty Murray of our state was like, no, I don't like Neil. And I don't like Pete Serrano, who Trump wants for the Eastern District of Washington. So I'm going to threaten to derail their nominations with what's called a blue slip. And anyway, it's all a bunch of jargon. But basically, Trump hasn't been able to get Neil Floyd confirmed. And so Neil Floyd had been serving as the de facto United States attorney, called like the first assistant U.S. attorney or something like that, until the federal judges in the Western District of Washington used a federal statute to choose their own United States attorney. Now, to be clear, this is something they're allowed to do under law. They picked a guy named Roger Rogoff, and they used 28 U.S. Code 546 on vacancies. It says, if an appointment expires under this subsection, the district court for such district may appoint a United States attorney to serve until the vacancy is filled. The order of appointment by the court shall be filed with the clerk of the court. So they had done this, and they got all these applications, and they selected Roger Rogoff, who's like a friend of former Governor Jay Inslee. Former Governor Jay Inslee appointed him to King County Superior Court way back in 2013, and then he gave him a job overseeing a new unit to investigate police use of force. So he's a Democrat, right? Which, look, the president is the one who has the power to nominate United States attorneys. And so when you have judges who, with a Republican president in office, go out, hear applications, and choose a flaming Democrat for the job, of course Trump is then immediately going to fire him. And as we reported exclusively, Roger Rogoff shows up at the United States Attorney's office at like 8 in the morning saying, I'm here for my first day on the job. And they're like, hold tight, Roger. And like 35 minutes later, he got a call from the White House saying, you're fired. Because they can do that. You know, judges can appoint someone, but the Trump administration has the power to fire any U.S. attorney they want in the country, even if it's someone who was appointed by a court via a federal statute to fill a vacancy. So Neil Floyd is still the de facto United... I think maybe he wasn't for like 35 minutes or something, but Neil Floyd is still the de facto United States attorney in Seattle. So now a step that we expected to happen. Roger Rogoff is now suing the government for firing him. So he was removed by the White House. He is now suing. Here's his rationale. And to be clear, we knew this was going to happen. And it sounded like to me that judges wanted to choose someone who would be willing to turn around and sue the Trump administration over being canned. Everyone expected, even Roger, to be fired by Trump when he walked in the door. They were setting it up for a lawsuit against the Trump administration. It says in his complaint, Rogoff argues that because of the nature of his appointment, the Trump administration did not have the authority to summarily remove him. The only legal way for the president to replace him would be for him to formally nominate a new top prosecutor in the office and for that pick to be confirmed by the Senate, his lawyer contends. Trump has not nominated anyone to fill the role. Rogoff said in a statement, the president's actions violate the law and they ignore the protections of the Constitution of the United States. His removal of me, like his removal of other court-appointed U.S. attorneys across the country, is illegal and cannot stand. You know, and look, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if that's going to be a strong argument in court. Certainly in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, maybe. But maybe it's something that that SCOTUS will ultimately have to rule on, because there is a statute that allows the judges to appoint someone they see fit. But I think they're missing, and people are missing, the overarching problem here, which is the way that this is all set up is ridiculous. One United States senator can derail the appointment and the choice of a president to be the top federal prosecutor in a jurisdiction? So the way the blue slip works is if it's a home state senator, they can basically say, no, I don't like this guy. Maybe for less hyper-partisan times that worked, but that doesn't work anymore, because that's what Democrats have done in basically every blue state in the nation, where they have, you know, a Democrat member of Senate who's willing to derail the appointment in that jurisdiction of President Trump's choice for the top federal prosecutor. And I said on the show when we broke this news is that what does this ultimately hurt? This tit for tat. They're investigating sex trafficking cases, child exploitation cases, major drug investigations. And you're in there playing politics with the office? Look, elections have consequences. That's what this boils down to. If you want United States attorneys who are Democrats, guess what you need to do? You need to find a good candidate for president of the United States. Hint, not Kamala Harris. And we need to get away, do away with the blue slip process altogether, because, you know, in red states, if it's a Democrat president, you don't think they're going to blue slip all of their nominees? Of course they are, because things are too hyper-partisan and public safety suffers as a result. And so that process needs to absolutely be abolished, because both sides will abuse it. The criminal justice system just slows to a screeching halt. Nothing's getting done. And then also, not to mention, if there's not an official United States attorney, I bet you're going to start to see defense attorneys say, well, this indictment isn't even valid because you don't even have a United States attorney. So this is going to mess everything up. And at the end of the day, the best thing for Democrats to do if they want their guy on the job is put all this insane nonsense socialism and stuff aside, find a good, sane candidate, and get them ready to win in 2028. That's the best way to do this, not whatever the hell this is. All right, Washington State setting another record when it comes to the amount of money they're having to pay out in lawsuits. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Another record-setting year, and not in a good way. This from the Washington State Standard. Wasets another record with growing lawsuit costs. The state spent $537 million in one fiscal year as the financial toll mounts from years of claims of government misconduct. So let me give some background to all of this, because we'll get into, you know, where a lot of these cases are coming from. So first of all, I'll say for the record, you know, when the government does something wrong, I think that people need to be made whole. You know, I'm suing the government right now over the press pass issue. And so, you know, I'm not saying that this is a hard issue, because as I'm going to discuss, I think the government pays out too much money in certain cases and has set themselves up for this in a way where it's being abused a little bit. And I think depending on the kinds of cases, the government will settle like this because, oh, it's not their money and whatever it is, just write them a big fat check. You know, as an example, in the city of Seattle on a smaller scale. So when an entity like the Seattle Times sues over public records issues, the city of Seattle will be like, oh, we're sorry. Here it is. Take a big fat check, Seattle Times, because it's just going to reporting that supports us and supports our political causes. When I sued the city of Seattle over a cut and dry public records issue, what is that, 4 years ago now? We still don't have a final outcome. We won in the Court of Appeals. The city waited until the clock was almost out, appealed to the state Supreme Court, which had already decided, you know, not to challenge it previously or not to take up the case previously. But they're just running out the clock. In the meantime, we're racking up hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, which they're eventually going to have to pay. But because they wanted to stick it to the conservative and didn't want to have to write me a check, they're like, oh, we'll drain all our resources. We'll spend as much taxpayer money as we need on this. So a little bit of context here. A couple years ago, Washington state lawmakers decided to change the laws around lawsuits that specifically involved child sex abuse. So they basically said, moving forward from 2024 on, there's no statute of limitations, meaning that you could, you know, if you were a child who was abused in the custody of the state or DSHS, then like you could sue at any point from the abuse till, you know, you're in your 90s and on your deathbed. But retroactively, they also made it very easy to bring up these kinds of cases from decades ago. Rather than read you the RCW that changed, there was actually this law office that I thought explained it in an easier way. And I wanted to read you how the law office characterizes it, because that shows, you know, how they take these cases from clients and, you know, help build cases and lawsuits against the state of Washington that from things that allegedly happened decades ago. So as I said, you know, after June 6, 2024, there is no statute of limitations anymore. However, you can also sue the state of Washington or any private entity. This applied not just to lawsuits against the state, but any private entity involving child sex abuse. So either if it happened after June 6, 2024, no statute of limitations. But if it's before that, it can be 3 years from the act itself, if you realized the harm it caused right away. 3 years from discovery, if you realized later, even decades later, that the abuse caused your injury or condition. Or 3 years from discovering a specific injury, if you discover a new or deeper impact later, you have 3 years from that discovery to bring a claim. Okay, so think about that for a second. If you were, you say that you were molested by a foster parent under the, you know, care of the Department of Social and Health Services in the 1970s, and now you're 55 years old, 60 years old, you could say, well, I've just realized that this caused my anxiety. I've just realized that that childhood abuse 50 years ago caused me harm. The changes in the law in 2024 allow you now to sue over it. So that has led to an influx of lawsuits around the issue of child sex abuse against private entities, but also against the government. And so that's why you're seeing $500 million in payouts and these record payouts. So again, from the state standard, the latest total of $537 million accounts for payments from July 1st of last year to June 30th of this year. The State Department of Children, Youth, and Families makes up most of the cases, about $388 million. And that's not a surprise because of what we just discussed. They opened up the floodgates. It says, as the cases stack up, so do the legal fees. The state spent $32 million on lawyers and staff in the attorney general's office, plus $43 million on outside law firms, for a total of more than $76 million. That's up from $58 million the year before. And again, none of this is a surprise when you consider the changes in the law that allowed people from decades and decades ago to say, oh, now I want to sue the state for the abuse that I may or may not have suffered, frankly. And how do you prove it? Now, I'm not defending the state in that. If the state was complicit and a child was abused under the care of the state of Washington, I think they should be made whole again. But how do you prove a case or disprove a case from 50, 40, 30 years ago where the person they're accusing, maybe a foster parent, might not even be alive? And so what I've been told is that essentially you have some unscrupulous attorneys who will seek out people who were in foster care decades ago and basically build a case around it because they know that the state of Washington can't really disprove it, and they'll just write them a check for $100,000. $100,000 to go away. $100,000 to go away. And so you have these attorneys who know that. And whether the allegations are true or not, they're going to get some sort of check from the state of Washington. And as much as I want, again, child abuse victims to be made whole, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Moving forward, by all means, let's do this in a different way. But going back that long, and it's the taxpayers who are footing the bill for it, that doesn't make a lot of sense either. So what are they going to do about it? The Standard says it's a bandage for the problems. The legislature approved $1 billion earlier this year to shore up the state self-insurance fund. And then they did what? They did what they do best. Let's appoint a panel to this. Let's get great minds in a room and think it through. A new panel is tasked with proposing systemic changes to stem the flow of claims and resulting multimillion dollar payouts, kneecapping the state. State leaders have floated ideas to help address the issue. One from Ferguson would have set up an administrative panel to specifically handle years-old cases against the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Lawmakers this year proposed requiring arbitration for civil cases against governments, leaving the outcome to a neutral third party in hopes of speeding up cases. Ohio has a model somewhat similar to this called Court of Claims, but the bill was watered down in the legislative process, installed in the face of staunch opposition from trial lawyers who bring these cases, of course, because they want maximum damage. And I'm not saying all of them are unscrupulous or all of the claims are unjustified. We already know what an absolute you-know-what the Department of Children, Youth, and Families is. Poorly run, mismanaged, and they are not looking out for the best interests of kids. So do I not believe that there's a bunch of legitimate child abuse claims that happen under the watchful eye of the state? Of course I believe that there are. But I also think that this has opened up the door for this to be abused. And it's not just child abuse cases. Like, for instance, there was this lawsuit involving teacher pensions that the state is now having to pay out on. This just came out yesterday. WA ordered to pay $118 million in teacher pension skimming case. And this is a case that dates back to the 1990s and involved withholding interest earned by over 2,600 teachers. So you have all these cases in the middle of a budget crisis. And why we wonder why they're passing new taxes left and right. One, they can't get their spending under control. And then two, they're getting sued all over the place. And then at the same time, they're suing the Trump administration every other day. This doesn't even get into how much the state of Washington has spent suing the Trump administration in his first term and in this term. We sue him, I think, more than any other state in the nation. And then, on top of that, the state of Washington is taking on other ideological battles. I've already said, you know, they've spent probably at this point, I would guess, $150,000 in their efforts to stop me and Ari Hoffman and Jonathan Cho from getting press passes. And they'll probably have to spend more than $1 million before it's all done. And we're in a budget crisis. But they'd rather do that than let the three of us come down to Olympia a couple times a year and ask a few hard questions. So, I mean, they're hand-wringing over all this money they're putting out, but they also have no issue spending a lot of money suing Trump and spending a lot of money trying to control who's the media and who's not the media. So, yeah, there needs to be a fix to this. I don't think it makes a lot of sense to let people go back 40, 50 years in the past and say, oh, I have a new injury because you can never prove those cases beyond a reasonable doubt unless you've saved some sort of evidence or someone confesses to it. So we have to be realistic here. Make people whole, you know, who were abused and have strong cases. But what's happening in the state of Washington is just ridiculous. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. I did make this the subject of our daily subscriber show poll because I get it. It's a tough issue and abuse happens. I asked you, should there be a statute of limitations for suing the government or a private entity for child sex abuse? 88% of you say no. So 88% of you support the idea that there shouldn't be a statute of limitations. Matt Gilbert says, no statute of limitations. You carry those scars for life, but you still have to prove your case. Nicole, what do you think? Yes or no?
I think the answer could be yes. It is longer than it was previously, yeah, right? So could it be like 20 years? Yes, because then I think you're, you know, 35 and you've had time to become an adult and think about what happened to you. Maybe something's changed in the situation, you can come out. But yeah, 50 years. Mm.
It is a great point that I think 20 years after your 18th birthday, mm-hmm. you know, for you to decide or, you know, come to terms with that and to bring a case forward, that's a reasonable middle ground.
Yeah.
20 years, let's go to trial. So I don't know. Melanie said, I said no because some may block the memory and it doesn't come to light until they're an adult. Deanne said, if too much time has passed, an innocent person has a difficult time proving his or her innocence. And that is true when you think about the people who are accused and maybe they're not even alive. And, you know, got an attorney like mm-hmm. asking you, were you abused as a 6-year-old, you know, 40 years ago and can't even interview the foster parents. So that's tough. Matt says, no limitations. I sued the Issaquah School District in 2021 for sexual abuse by a teacher. The abuse happened in 1998. It wasn't until I was adult and mother to realize the impact it had on me almost 25 years later. It's a life sentence for victims. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Matt, because that would be, well, would say it happened in 1998. And I don't know how old you were at the time, but if we said, you know, at your 18th birthday plus 20 years, that probably would have been within that window for mm-hmm. you. James said, no, the concept of a statute of limitations is a time beyond which the victim should have emotionally and financially recovered from the injury or loss. I don't think you ever get over something like sexual abuse, especially as a child. Yeah, and it is a tough one. And I think that maybe their heart was in the right place to say, yeah, we need to make sure that these young people can bring these cases. But I don't know. I think it's gotten a little bit out of control from what I've heard about this sort of mill of claims from the same attorneys over and over and over again. Matthew says, too often this takes years to get exposed due to legal maneuvering and flat out lying and the government not being forthright about what they know and their involvement. But remember, this isn't just about the government. You know, if you look at like the Catholic Church or the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts or whatever it is, and I'm not saying there aren't legitimate claims there as well, but at what point is it sort of like, well, how do we defend ourselves against this? And now we have to have the choice of spending millions of dollars on legal fees or just writing a check to someone, even if we deny the allegations. So I think that's a difficult conversation, but maybe one worth continuing to have as they try to figure out how do we deal with this influx of payouts. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First of all, tomorrow, our friend Zach Abraham is having his Know Your Risk live webinar, his latest one. So that's tomorrow, July 23rd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's called his Market Blind Spot Webinar. And it's free just to log in, attend, listen to Zach and his team talk about what's happening in the market between AI, crypto, and tech, what's happening in the Middle East, how that's impacting inflation and your retirement portfolio. And you can also ask some questions if you'd like about how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, to give your retirement as much upside as possible, which is the goal. So sign up for Zach's free Market Blind Spot webinar. It's happening tomorrow, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can still sign up. And then while you're there, you can figure out how to follow Zach across all of his social media platforms and check out his daily podcast. We also have a new episode of Swamp Watch with Zach coming out today. So be ready for that. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right. Takes a lot to get in trouble as a teacher these days. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Good job. I keep trying to trick you. You never quite fall for it. All right. So you remember this story from May? The newly elected president of the Seattle Teachers Union has a little bit of a background. So this was again in May, Seattle Education Association elects teacher under investigation for child abuse as their next president. So when she was elected as the president of the Seattle Education Association, she was already under investigation for abusing students. Figure that one out, right? So it said, in a complaint filed with the district, the parents of a third grade student at Rising Star who has autism, a speech delay, and is partially verbal, said they noticed bruises in the shape of adult fingers on their son's arm in October and again in December. Using visual aids, they asked their son whether an adult caused the bruises, which he identified this woman. The parents also allege that in December, their son's therapist saw her throw a marker at the child's head, which allegedly struck his face and glasses while he was working at a whiteboard. Tyson March, the student's father, told the outlet that his son has struggled emotionally since the alleged incidents and has not wanted to go back to school. And this is the Seattle Education Association president, Ibijoke Idowu, is the best that I can do with that.
Pretty good.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So we've been waiting for something to happen. Look, innocent until proven guilty, by all means. I just think it's interesting that they elected her while the investigation was ongoing. Like, if they elect her and then it comes out, maybe a different situation, but while the investigation was ongoing. And now the Seattle Public Schools' own investigation has confirmed that, yeah, she probably did abuse children. This from Fox 13, Seattle Public Schools confirms teacher, union president, harmed students. It says, according to Seattle Public Schools investigation, investigators found it was more likely than not that Idowu grabbed one of the students by the arm, causing bruising, and threw a hardcover book that struck another. She threw a hardcover book at a kid. The report also includes statements from school employees describing repeated yelling and physical interactions with students. One instructional assistant told investigators she can be vocal, scream at the kids, grab them to get them to do things. Several students flinch when she comes near. They are scared. That is horrific. Mm-hmm. They said Idowu responded to crying students by saying, "I don't care about your crying." The district's investigation also included photographs shared by Ibrahim and Marsh, parents, documenting bruising investigators concluded was more likely than not caused by Idowu. Now, here's the kind of stuff that just beyond that being horrifying. It says more than a month later, Seattle Public Schools has not said whether she's even still employed, whether any disciplinary action has been taken, or whether she could return to the classroom. The investigation was completed June 17th. And so it's been forwarded for a personnel review, but we're a month and some change removed from that, and you can't even tell the media and the public if she works there, if she's going to be allowed to come back. And not to mention, is she still the union president? You're saying your investigation found she threw a hardcover book at a kid. Kids flinch when she comes near them. She's abused several children. She screams at them. No way in hell. Even if she's black and her name is Ibijoke Idowu, and I know we got the whole DEI thing and it's very hard to hire a teacher with powerful unions, let alone a black teacher. But I don't care if she's black, white, or whatever it is. You abuse someone else's child in a public school, you should never be able to teach again. And you sure as hell shouldn't be able to be the president of the teachers' union. But I think it says a lot about the teachers who are making those choices and the people who are involved in the unions these days. Just outrageous. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. Boop. Okay, you probably heard that there's a shortage of public defenders. And so for one Washington State Police Department, the solution is simple. Let's just not arrest criminals. There's no public defenders to take their cases, so let's not even bother arresting them, okay? This is from KATU Portland. Vancouver, Washington police halt arrests for some misdemeanors amid public defender shortage. So it says the Vancouver Police Department, the chief, put out an edict basically saying officers need to change the way they handle several crimes. Police Chief Troy Price announced the changes in a department memo released internally on Friday and obtained by KATU News. The memo states that the attorney's office is limiting the types of misdemeanor cases that can be cited into court because of budgetary impacts tied to a lack of public defenders. So here's what the chief of police said in a memo to his officers. Due to the unfunded Washington State Supreme Court mandate, which reduced caseloads for public defenders, coupled with budgetary constraints at the city level, for the time being, misdemeanor cases are being dismissed due to lack of defense attorney availability. In the last few weeks, over 17 cases have been dismissed, including DV assault cases. The city attorney's office is addressing the budgetary impacts by limiting the types of cases that can be cited into court effective immediately. The below-listed offenses will be referred to the city attorney's office for a charging decision, as the option of citing these into court has been removed. So look, they're still going to be able to refer them, but it's going to be a different process, as trespass in city parks, second-degree criminal trespass, possession of a controlled substance, using a controlled substance in a public place, unlawful possession of marijuana by a person younger than 21, third-degree theft, including many shoplifting cases, and disorderly conduct. So what is the de facto kind of result of all of this? The president of the Vancouver Police Officers Guild tells KATU the policy change could make it more difficult for officers to investigate crimes such as shoplifting. He says, so somebody goes in and shoplifts, and we know it's in their backpack without knowing that we're going to make it an arrest, either the citation or actual physical arrest. We can't search them legally. We can't search their property. So they can say, hey, our stuff that they just stole is in that backpack, but we can't do anything about it. So if they're not going to arrest or cite, right, they are limited maybe in some of their investigatory tactics. So what are they going to do? Well, they're just not going to, they're not going to bother. That is the result. They're not going to bother. And I don't really blame the police chief, frankly, because if you're being told, like, these cases aren't moving forward because there's no public defenders, we don't have the budget, you are not going to have your police officers, especially in a state where nearly every police department is dealing with low staffing. You're not going to have them go out and spend precious hours investigating crimes where nothing is going to happen. And you can't even take the person into custody anyway. And so shoplifters are going to get away with it. Trespassing, which, you know, there's been a lot of homelessness crime and stuff down there. Using drugs in public, that's going to proliferate. And it all comes down to this mandate from the Washington State Supreme Court. Another reason why it's so important to make sure you're voting in those elections this year, where they said, oh, we have to reduce the caseload for public defenders. Well, okay, if you do that and you don't add more public defenders, then you're going to have a shortage and you're going to have an issue. So this is another one of those edicts. It's happened before from the Washington State Supreme Court that are disastrous for public safety. So this is going to be one of them. And I imagine that Vancouver is not the only city dealing with this. Because obviously, if there's a public defender shortage in the state, that's going to touch like every court district in the state. And so that's why you have a lot of these police agencies that say, we're not going to waste our time with shoplifters or trespassers or people using drugs out in the open, even in cities where they have the political will to do it and to make arrests in those cases. Unbelievable. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Go from sell with Wes to sold with Wes. Yes, even in a market where there's as many listings as there are now and maybe not as many people coming into the state to buy them, it's all about your listing standing out. And that's what Wes and his team specialize in. You can peruse some of their recent listings on his website. And also just ask him for a free market analysis. Even if you're just at the early stages of figuring out, do I want to sell my home? Do I want to move out of the state or whatever it is? Just reach out to Wes and say, hey, heard about you on Brandy's show. I'm kind of worried about the state of the market right now. Want to get the most value out of my home. What are your recommendations? And he'll just give you a lay of the land. And I think that's a great place to start. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, a little bit of national news. This broke just as we were coming on the air yesterday. This news out of New Jersey. Wow, that is so weird. I thought that illegals just weren't registering to vote. And this was all just in our imagination. It's like another conspiracy theory turns out to be true. This from New Jersey. 6,600 non-citizens registered to vote after an error in New Jersey's motor vehicle system, the governor says. So here is a description. So it says that this, the 6,600 was in 2023 and 2024, according to the new governor there, Mikey Sherrill. The Democratic governor who took office this year blamed a motor vehicle commission system software error, but said a preliminary analysis showed that fewer than 400 of those who registered that way went on to cast ballots. 400 illegals casting ballots is huge. We've had statewide races here decided by fewer than 400 votes. a governor's race that you might be familiar with, the commissioner of public lands race. So you want to say, oh, it's only 400. 400 in a close race is the deciding factor. Says she also attempted to head off any future criticism of the issue from the president. She said, as the Trump administration tries to weaponize elections for political gain, I'm ensuring we protect our elections. Sure you are. Cheryl promised immediate action and said she has ordered that all erroneously added voter registrations from that period be removed. Yeah, I would hope so. She's also replacing the vendor who ran the system and is launching an investigation into how the error happened. She said she is appalled by the reckless failures that allowed this to happen and the lack of transparency shown by those in charge at the time. Now, look, and I don't blame her because she wasn't the governor at the time. She was in Congress, and so she didn't really have anything to do with this. But good thing to call it out and to fix it now. My question would be, were there any races in that period of time that were decided by 400 votes? Can you nullify it? What if there were? Like, can you go back and unelect someone? Like, what do you do in a situation like that? And President Trump responded to this, and he talked about Homeland Security has been digging into all the states that will give them data to figure out how many of those states had illegal aliens registered. Of course, they're still struggling to get that data from our state. And I don't even know if our state knows, frankly, because they don't collect social security numbers or proof of citizenship in order to register to vote. Donald Trump said 35,000 is the new number just released by Homeland Security of non-citizens registered to vote in New Jersey. These are just the ones that got caught. The real numbers will prove to be many times this amount. They are all Democrats. Republicans, get smart, straighten out our crooked elections, pass the Save America Act. So I'm not sure where the differences are coming from between what Homeland Security says they found in New Jersey, 35,000, versus what the governor said they found in New Jersey, 6,600. So that's quite the discrepancy that we'll need to get to the bottom of. But Congresswoman Emily Randall of our state was cornered by a reporter in Washington, D.C., and was asked about and I don't know why they asked Emily Randall. I guess she's a Democrat in Congress, although she's from our state, but they asked her about voter fraud and illegals voting.
6,600 individuals didn't vote illegally.
That's not for certain. I mean, they're actually registered, so they could if they wanted to, right?
But there's an independent investigation that New Jersey has initiated.
Initiated?
So far, the proof shows that a very, very, very small fraction voted illegally, and they have discovered this, and they're going to continue investigating it. And I think, like, the point that for a very small percentage of error, we have error in every system. We have fraud in every system. There's a lot of fraud coming out of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. To make it more difficult for the vast majority of Americans to vote because of a very small percentage of error and fraud is not popular. It's not popular amongst the American people.
It is popular.
And it's basically a poll tax.
But that's an admission that a small percentage of illegals are voting, right?
Oh, oops. Okay, first of all, what is with the vocal fry and the upswing? Hate that. That's one of my pet peeves, I've got to say. She actually went to the extent of interrupting an interview that was happening about it and making a comment about it. And I would have advised her against that because her answers made no sense. But look, it's the common, oh, that's not happening, right-wing conspiracy. Okay, it's happening, but it's just a few, so it's not a big deal. And you know what comes next? Oh, it's happening, but illegals should be able to vote. That is the stages of denial. We talk about it all the time. Or, oh yeah, that's happening, but it's Trump's fault. So it doesn't matter if it's one or if it's 400 or if it's 4 million. I mean, you have these states that just don't check. They're not checking. They're not cleaning their voter rolls. I've said this in Washington State. The Secretary of State could not sit in front of me. He wouldn't be able to. And tell me how many illegal aliens might be on the voter rolls, because they can register to vote with a driver's license that they can get without showing proof of citizenship, and all they have to do is attest that they are in fact allowed to vote in the state of Washington. And the only way they'd ever be caught is if someone snitched on them for voting and said, "Hey, my neighbor's an illegal," and they voted. And how do you find that out? So it's just outrageous. And she says, "Oh, it's." You know, what the president wants in voter ID is not popular. It's immensely popular among Democrats and Republicans and independents to require proof of ID in order to vote. So I don't know where that's coming from. All right, more and more countries are weighing the idea of banning social media for teenagers. You know, there's been some countries that have already gone that direction, usually under 18 or 15. France became the first European nation to ban social media for children under 15. Both chambers of parliament there passed the law, bars phone use. So it does that, but it also bars phone use in high schools. And it's supposed to take effect by September. Now, I've already said I'm a little iffy about banning phones in school because things are so crazy and we get so much good stuff from kids who bring their phones to school and record the nonsense. And so I'm a little leery in Washington State of not allowing kids to have phones to document the insanity that's happening. But so other European nations are considering this. Prime Minister of Spain wants to do it. Denmark and Greece have also unveiled plans. So, you know, I think a lot of countries are going to be going in this direction. I actually saw that just a few days ago, Pew Research Center released some polling on this that found a majority of Americans support banning social media for kids under 16. It says nearly 6 in 10 Americans support it. They said that they would want to ban kids under the age of 16 from using any social media sites. 21% oppose it and 23% say not sure. So I don't know. I still think this comes down to parenting. I don't want the government deciding what kids are mature enough to use a social media platform. Ultimately, you know, I'm okay with some sort of regulations and restrictions on the type of content for minors or whatever it is, because dangerous place. But ultimately, parents need to figure it out and limit screen time and be in control over that. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. And if you were on our subscriber Q&A last night and heard my colorful story at the end of it, I'm feeling fine today, okay? Just to let you know. First, if you are a landlord in the state of Washington, there's a lot going on right now. I mean, Seattle is considering banning so-called junk fees. Over in Spokane, they're considering mandating landlords provide air conditioning for tenants at their cost. So it's never ending. And you just need someone in your corner to look out for your interests as well and to try to help you navigate the changing rules and regulations. That organization is the Rental Housing Association of Washington. If you're a landlord with one unit, five units, 10 units, and you're not a member of RHA, I mean, you really should be, because they've got your back to help with keeping up with the rules and regulations, screening forms, but they're also taking on important private property rights cases. They're down in Olympia advocating on your behalf. And they have really fun events all year long where they talk about housing policy and politics. And I'll speak at one of theirs in the fall. So if you're a landlord in Washington, you got to be a member of RHA. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, let's get to comments from the live stream, shall we? Jodak4399 says, Initiative Petition 28 in Oregon is the one I was talking about yesterday, talking about on the live chat. I think it was about, I wish there were some details in there. Miranda, can you put some details in there for me on Initiative Petition 28?
I can't remember what he was talking about.
It would criminalize hunting, fishing, and many standard agricultural practices. Got it. Okay. HB Bunnies, Brandy, I hope you're feeling better. I was sick yesterday before the show, but I'm fine now. Feeling great.
It's great.
A plus.
It was a little, yeah, that was interesting.
I told the story to subscribers.
Okay. You have to be a subscriber.
Not telling it
to
anyone else.
Yucky.
Yeah, it was gross. Okay, anyway, you want to get into the Sophie Cunningham comments?
Sure. Lachman, you too. A lot of times you need only one person to speak out before others will find the bravery to speak out as well.
Yep, bravery is contagious. And I think that she has a lot of popularity right now. So hopefully that makes people at ease to just say what needs to be said.
Right.
Nathan, thank you as a father and grandfather of girls for leading this fight to protect girls' sports. There's a lot of people leading this fight. I would not call myself a leader in the fight, but Sophie definitely has the potential to be that person. Riley Gaines, the young women in our state who have lent their voices to this debate as well. All right, on the local celebs fighting to keep the income tax. You want to start with LCS?
Sure. It doesn't matter what taxes is what tax it is. As long as it's a tax, Democrats will vote for it.
Yeah, I love a good tax. Hawk fan, they're pulling up the rugs behind them. Why would they care that jobs and pay are destroyed? They made their gold right. That's what I say about Rick Steves is like, he's made his wealth. He's been doing what he's been doing for a long time. And what he's doing is making it harder for other people to have the same success and to come here and have the same success. So it's really selfish in my mind.
Agreed. From Andrea, I lost all respect for Rick Steves years ago. After Trump was reelected, he ran his, or he reran his episode on fascism in Europe. He's also long salivated over the socialist system in Europe.
Yeah, just he's a loony lefty. Ken Jennings.
I didn't realize people, I don't know. I just don't pay attention to Rick Steves. But twice in the last month, I talked to people who plan trips and they used Rick Steves. Either they were going on one of his trips or they used him as research. And I was like, really?
Yeah. There's... I mean, look, they don't know he's a loony lefty.
I know. These people did not at all. That's not a thing.
On the fired U.S. attorney suing Trump, Big Princess, is this guy related to the ex-Sound Transit CEO Peter Rogoff? I don't know the answer to that. We can do some research on it.
Yeah,
Roger Rogoff, Peter Rogoff. I don't know. Okay, go ahead.
From Deanne, who pays Roger's attorney fees to sue the federal government?
Well, probably the courts, because and this is so crazy because they're supposed to be like a separate branch. Why do they get to decide? Why does statute allow them to decide essentially who the top prosecutor will be when that prosecutors will be in the courtroom arguing in front of the judge? It really makes no sense. But yeah, it's a good point. It probably is the federal court that will pay his attorney's fees. That's wild. I didn't even think about that. On Washington paying a record number of lawsuits, Bonnie says, imagine what could be accomplished for the good with all those dollars spent on frivolous lawsuits. So disgusting. And I'm not saying they're all frivolous. The one that we filed against the state of Washington, definitely not frivolous. Frivolous for them to fight it.
Exactly. From Watermelon Shrug.
Shug. Watermelon Shug. Sugar Shug. Pie.
The problem the state has is unable to defend itself and would rather pay out, not necessarily the statute of limitations itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is probably just ease of like, look, write him a check because it's going to cost us more, you know, trying to dig into this 40-year-old case to defend ourselves. But I don't know. It's probably a case-by-case basis.
It does seem weird because if you know you can't prove something, why not fight it? But they're just, we don't want to do the work, maybe.
Yeah. And no, I mean, I think that it becomes this sort of mill where it's like, oh, we're going to bring this big case against you. And then they're like, okay, just write a check for $100,000 or whatever.
Right. Because then it does become a lesson to others. So when you don't fight them, like if you fought a few, then maybe others would not do it.
John Thomas. So Seattle schools are stealing the money voters wanted for school lunches to spend it on black only after school programs and other similar black only programs. Kind of illegal. I haven't heard about this. So Seattle's doing black only after school programs.
I'm not sure.
That wouldn't surprise me. I just haven't heard about it. All right.
On the phone ban in schools, Papa Woody says all schools should have private security video and audio. And I agree. They should have
CCTV. In classrooms. Even if you can't watch it live, and there's probably some good reasons for that and arguments against it, you should be able to, like on buses, school buses have video. There's an allegation something happened on a school bus. Let's pull that video up. So kind of same thing with schools, right? Old Sub Sailor. Hi, buddy. $50 for Sophie Cunningham shoes. Damn, you're going to make me buy the shoes, aren't you?
Maybe we could buy them and then do something for girls' sports. Give them to a high school girl.
But then it's like you'd have to know their size, right?
Well, we could buy them after we know the size of the winner.
Yeah.
But like I'm guessing they're a lot more than $50.
No, they're like $120 or something like that. So yeah, they're pretty pricey. All right, Nicole, thank you. Mm-hmm. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, I like the momentum here. You have some Democrats starting to speak up about the budgeting issue and the spending problem that Washington Democrats had. You had former Governor Christine Gregoire, former Governor Gary Locke, and now you have Todd Lewicki, who's the CEO of the Kraken.
Moody's and Fitch give us a negative rating on our future credit. We have an issue. And so put aside the millionaire tax, which people like me that are privileged can complain about. My concern is that the average taxpayer is not getting their money's worth. And when you spend without consequence, as we have, and your spending is now outpacing your means, then you're going to do things that are going to have consequence. I do know a lot of people who own businesses, and I am shocked at how many are leaving. And we can say it doesn't matter and goodbye. It does matter. There's other companies right now, as we speak, talking about it and probably meeting about relocating out of the state. We've got to reverse this trend.
Yeah, and I'm glad he says it does matter. You know, we can, like Katie Wilson, buy. No, that's insane. That's your tax base. And what he's saying there, very similar, you know, verbiage and argument to what Christine Gregoire and Gary Locke are saying, which is, you know, it's not even really about the income tax on millionaires. It's about this tax and spend environment. It's about the fact that you're taxing people so much, yet they're getting so little. And you don't know what it looks like to budget. And I do think that is a strong argument that a lot of people feel. It's like, okay, well, what am I getting for that money? Because at some point, even the real generous progressives, they're going to start to say no to all the new taxes that are put on the ballot, you know, in places like Seattle, $400 million for new libraries, this massive new levy for transportation. So, yeah, I agree with Todd Lywicki, and I'm glad he's speaking up about it. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We do appreciate every single one of you. Great to see, well, I didn't see you, but great to be on the subscriber Q&A with you guys last night. Always a lot of fun. We will be back tomorrow with our final live show of the week. If you'd like to support the show, it's just $5 a month for a subscription. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show.